Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So finally, I want to say thank you for all your support. My time here was amazing. Seven greatest years of my life. Got here as a boy, turning into a man. Grew in this city, and the fans embraced me, so... You know, Houston has been my home. This is my home now, so I'm grateful for everybody.
That was Carlos Correa after the game yesterday. Astros losing 7-0, falling in six games in the World Series. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. That was his response to a question that, what would you tell the fans if this is indeed the end? So those were Correa's messages afterwards. Look, we've talked about this throughout the entire regular season. I think we kind of put it on the back burner a little bit in the postseason because, look, you're in the midst of a deep playoff run. The Astros finishing two wins shy of winning a World Series, which disappointing. They didn't get the job done. Still not a failure of a season by any stretch of the imagination. They gave it a great ride. One of only two teams that made it to the World Series. A lot to be proud of whenever you look at this Houston Astros team, but it does leave a sour taste in your mouth that you didn't win it all. Especially after everything that happened with the cheating scandal, all of the allegations and the naysayers after 2019. But now this is the primary focus as we enter the offseason. Free agents, they can start signing with other teams 5 days after the conclusion of the World Series. Deg Glanville, who joined us earlier, said, look, he doesn't think that many free agents will sign before the new CBA is done. I agree with that. You'd be kind of silly to sign a new deal whenever you don't know what the rules of baseball are going to be once they get something worked out, if they get something worked out, and when they get something worked out. But listening to the press conferences and the players and kind of getting my thoughts on this, Carlos Correa is as good as gone. I give it a 10% chance that he's back with the Astros next season.
Well, he's not Freddie Freeman, right? He's not going to give the hometown discount because he wants to stay. He wants to explore free agency. He wants to see every opportunity that's out there and how much everybody's willing to give him before he even considers what he's going to do. I do think it's more than 10% because I do think that, as we talked about, as it relates to Dusty Baker, this locker room matters. The relationships he has on this team matters. There's a communication, obviously, with James Click, which helps him as well because it helped him to bring in his friend Marwin Gonzalez. Altuve saying that he believes they're going to do whatever they have to do to keep him, which obviously Altuve doesn't control the purse strings and the checkbook, and so I don't think that he has any kind of clue what they're willing to spend. I think the other interesting point was one that was made on the telecast last night, which is at a certain point, there's only so many teams that need shortstops that are willing to pay a high dollar. Are there going to be a guy or two that's left kind of holding the bag? If that's the case, that's the kind of situation I can see James Click swooping in on going, hey, we know that so-and-so's going here and so-and-so's going there. If we lose Correa, but we know between Simeon and one other guy, they might be dangling in the wind. And you might get a Dallas Keuchel deal when, remember, he was expecting all the big dollars and he didn't get them and he settled for, cents on the dollar on a short-term deal to prove it, that maybe that's the way the James Click mentality plays into this, that, hey, we're still a damn good ball club that people want to play for. We proved that. And now, if you don't get all your money up front, if you come here on a short-term deal and prove that you can still play, it's a perfect situation for you to have center stage, lots of national TV exposure, and if you play well, we might even keep you.
There's a couple of players in the minors that the Astros are high on at short. They like Jeremy Pena. They like Pedro Leon. Both of them have played short. Both of them have played outfielder. Pena's probably a little further along, more likely that he would be the guy if you go that route. I don't see the Astros going that route, but I don't see him going the Correa route. I think it's more likely that they'll do something like you said, where they wait out the market. Mm-hmm. They wait to see who are those final two shortstops maybe that are left out in free agency, and they make them a deal. Kind of what Marcus Semien did for Toronto, where you give yep. them, you know, a big deal for a short term, like, you know, 2 to 3 seasons. I can see them going that route.
I told you, he's an older guy that would look, if you do lose him, right? If you're right, and you do lose him and Correa walks, he's a guy that, because he's a little older, he's not looking for 10 years. He's a guy that makes a lot of sense for this team.
Yeah. I mean, from a business model point of view, you don't want one singular player taking up that big of the pie, right? You can make it a really competitive team if you split it up a little bit. James Click has a very busy offseason. You brought up the point, too, about Correa, and you think it's a higher percentage chance that he's back because of Dusty Baker. And it looks like Dusty Baker will be back as the Houston Astros manager. Bob Nightingale reporting that. Dusty, after the game yesterday, mentioned, yeah, he wants Correa back.
I hope it's not. It's not over yet. You know, he's a professional. You know, he's a real leader. Like I said, he doesn't alibi or any excuses. He just comes out, plays the game where he's supposed to play it. And he's a gladiator. He's a warrior, but a gentleman at the same time. You know, and I can tell how our guys gravitate towards him. I can tell even how the opposition show respect for him, you know, especially when they're around second base. You know, I mean, win or lose, you know, he doesn't clown, he doesn't showboat, he just plays. He plays the game the way that, you know, it should be played.
I don't know about the showboating part. He's nicknamed Carlos Showrea for a reason. You know, does the little hand to his ear, the time. Yeah, they only did it once. Look, I like Carlos Correa. We all know this. He's probably my favorite baseball player currently. I like the way he plays the game. Dusty mentioned a lot of the reasons why he would like to have him back as well. But at that price that we're expecting, to me, it's just not feasible.
No, I think that, again, it's going to come down to the X factor to me, which I've said all along is the owner in Jim Crane. Jim Crane's going to make or break this deal because he's going to get big offers. He's not going to be that guy left holding the bag while everybody else got paid. He's going to be one of the tops on everybody that needs a shortstop's list, starting with the Yankees, going to the Rangers, the Tigers, and otherwise. And so he's going to get offers. It's going to be how much of Jim Crane, is Jim Crane going to be involved and is going to put a value on his marketability, his value from a hometown fan base standpoint, as well as what he's going to do on the field and how sustainable the levels are for him in the future on the field. I think that Jim Crane could change everything up, but James Click's not that guy. James Click is an analytics guy. James Click has proven the Tampa Bay mold of, hey, we're going to ride you out until you're due big dollars, and then we're going to find the next one to replace you and thank you for your service. But we know already going in, we're not going to be the team that puts it all on the table for you to say that we owe you this for what you were able to do to us. It's in a smaller market the way that he's always done business. Does that translate well to Houston? No, probably not. But they also have a lot of big salaries on their books too. So all these factor in. The only guy that I think can save this deal for Houston, aside from Click getting creative, like you mentioned, with the more money up front and maybe lesser years, is going to be Crane with his checkbook coming in going, look, this is a guy I'm stepping in saying, I just can't do without. I got to have him.
I'm putting it a 10% chance, and I think the 10% is with Jim Crane. Like, if Jim Crane wants to get it done, that's where it gets done. James Click, in my opinion, isn't going to be the one that signs off on that deal. Correa asked after the game, because he had the at-bat late in the game. I think it was Chandler Rome that asked him, whenever you were stepping into that box, did you have in the back of your mind that this was the final time you'd be wearing that Astro uniform?
That's the only thing that was going through my mind, to be honest. A lot of feelings, mixed emotions. I spent 7 years with this club, and it was going through my mind for sure.
So that was Carlos Correa after the game saying, yep, this could be my final at-bat as a Houston Astro. And looks like the probability is that it would be his final at-bat as a Houston Astro. I'm curious what the city thinks right now, too. Because, look, during the whole season, everybody was ranting and raving about Carlos Correa. Look, he had a great year, gold glove type of season. The offense was probably the best offense he's had since the second year of being in Major League Baseball. And you can make the case it was the best offensive year he ever had. Everybody, pay him, pay him, pay him. Signs of pay him. Tweets of pay him. Didn't have a terrible postseason, but wasn't great. He had .261 in the World Series, didn't slug at all, didn't homer in the World Series. His playoffs were okay. He had the big hit in Chicago. I thought he was all right, at least offensively, good with the glove.
But the World Series, though, a lot of those were, excuse me, hits at meaningless times in games,
yeah, but you
too.
Look at the batting average, and yeah, I agree with you. But people at the end of the day, whenever they assess how he played in the World Series, they're just going to look at the average and say, 261, that's not bad. It's better than everybody else, right? He was all right offensively in the postseason. I'm curious right now what the city feels about Carlos Correa. Everybody during the regular season, we want him back. Pay him, pay him, pay him. Are you feeling the same way right now, a day after the Astros lost in the World Series and the offense, quite frankly, didn't show up? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Are you still wanting to pay Carlos Correa? Also, when we return, which one hurt worse, 2019, 2021? We discuss next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
You know, it's the same. You know, you're in the World Series, you want to win. You start thinking about how good it would be if you win, and then you lose. It's not a good feeling, but that's baseball. And like I said, the Braves played really good, and they deserve the championship.
So Jose Altuve, when asked the question, which year hurts, which World Series loss hurts worse, 2019, 2021, we'll discuss that in a moment. But how are we feeling, Houston, about re-signing Carlos Correa? Would you do the big contract? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A texter saying, how much are we looking at ballpark? $275-plus for 10 years? To me, you're going to have to be somewhere in the $30 to $35 million per year range with a minimum of about 7 years. Like, I think the worst deal that Carlos Correa would be willing to accept, the fewest amount of money that he'd be willing to accept, absolute minimum would be like $210 million for 7 years. Absolute minimum. And I think that's way on the low end.
I think it's low. I do. And I think that he's going to look at it from twofold. He said when he gave the deadline that we needed to get a deal done before the start of the regular season, they didn't get it. He said the Astros were not willing to do what we wanted to do, which was a long-term deal at a big contract. Long-term to me, and you've spelled this out on multiple occasions, is in that 10-year range. No 10-year deal, if you find one, you would find hundreds that, or almost 100 that didn't work out the same way. At the end of these deals in the last 3 to 5 years, they are absolutely just crushers for the organization. So the fact that if he wants 10 years, I think he's already gone. I think that if he's willing to be open to, and he feels like he's going to bet on himself even more, that at the end of his career he still have value, that, or he's open to front-loading it as you suggested, that maybe a shorter deal, but he gets a little bit more money up front, so it's worth his while in taking the risk, would make sense for both parties. But even still, it's going to be hard for the Astros because they have so many other big deals and so many money where they want to allocate it in certain ways, too, other than just shortstop.
713-780-ESPN. They do. They have holes to fill. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Kevin, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, good evening, guys. How y'all doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Man, I think you guys basically just made sort of the point that I was going to make, man. I just think anything, you talk about a $10 million deal in Major League Baseball, if you just look sort of at the history and the names, yeah, it's been some great names that's got those sort of deals, but the productivity after those deals were signed didn't come nowhere close to what those athletes, you know, were actually doing on the field. So why would you handicap yourself? And I'm not putting Carlos in the same category as some of those other guys who's been able to achieve getting a 10-year deal. And I believe a guy should get his money if, hey, look, if these billion-dollar babies can afford to give it to you, why not take it? You know, I ain't blaming the player, the athlete, ever for making that kind of money. But I'm just saying, for the sake of the organization, man, like, that's an absolute horrible deal. I wouldn't do that to save my own life with Carlos Correa. But, hey, you know, somebody's going to give it to him, you know. So if you can let a guy walk out the door on that roster right now, my thing has been to anybody, man, I think what they should have done really was throw money at Springer, which they didn't do, you know, pay him, because you wouldn't have come to Carlos's numbers at all. You pay Springer and you let Carlos's bet walk out the door, and you don't feel the same impact in the lineup that you would, like they're going to feel now. And not that Carlos has done a bang-up job. He's, what, like a 277 rounded way career hitter?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I just don't think you give a guy a 10-year deal. I think, you know, baseball has shown you can't do deals like that and sustain yourself long-term as an organization. I think it would be a horrible move for the Astros to do so at this point. One quick thing on a guy you guys mentioned earlier on the Texans front, Brandon Cooks. Man, Brandon's been on a bunch of rosters for a reason. And I think there's a reason why probably the phones weren't jumping off the hook in the Texans front office to acquire Cooks, man, because from all understanding, even before he got here, man, he wasn't a really good guy in the locker room. And I just think if you're a contender, why would you add a guy like that to your mix if you're already pretty solid with what you got going on, just to get another talented player that's, you know, not a good locker room mix? And that's all I got for
you. Thanks, Kev.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Yeah, I mean, everybody says that Brandon Cooks is a good locker room guy, and he's a culture guy, though, and he's a productive player. Yeah, he's bounced around. He's bounced around a bunch of different teams. But if you're a contender, I would have traded for Cooks, a third round or something along those lines. As far as Carlos Correa goes, click to Houston. Reporting that sources with knowledge of Crane and the Astros thinking tell me that Carlos Correa, the Crane, has been prepared to increase the club offer to 6 years for $210 million, that averages $35 million per season. To me, that will get the attention of Correa. To me, that is respectful. I still think he gets more.
Well, I think that here's the thing that we're not factoring in, and that is, you know, we know that the Miguel Cabrera deals, we know that the Albert Pujols deal I always go to are the poster children for why you never make a long-term deal like this, because desperation is going to hurt you in so many ways, and it starts with how much you're handcuffed later in the deals. But I think that when you look at it as from this perspective too, when you look at what Crane's trying to do and what Correa really wants, you can't put a price tag or you can't put a value on the stupidity of a general manager that has all the money in the world at his mercy. Look what the Mets did a year ago. When the fact that you get new ownership and the fact that they couldn't even keep a general manager in place because of their out-of-the-office dealings, but at the same time, the owner came in right up from the get-go, said, I'm going to compete with the Yankees. I'm going to throw money at the walls to whoever will take it. And Francisco Lindor was like, hey, me. And you overpaid for a guy that underproduced in the first year of a long, long-term deal. And the Mets look like they are going to be screwed for a long time unless he somehow finds a way in year two in the National League to figure it out offensively. So therefore, this is another reason why you have to be so leery. That's a fair deal. 35 a year is more than fair market value, and it is something that Correa should pay attention to. However, if the Yankees are involved, all bets are off, because you know they're going to throw you an extra 30, 40 million just because they can.
I heard somebody mention the Red Sox as a possibility for Correa too. I don't see that
third
happening.
Base? They don't have a place for him.
Well, you could get creative. You could move him to third, move Devers over to first. You could do it if you really wanted to. The problem there is Bogaerts is under contract through 2026. He does have an opt-out, but it's after next season, after 2022. So, I mean, you're looking at a situation where you have to totally reconstruct what you're going to do on the infield. Maybe. I mean, Cora loves Correa. Correa loves Cora. That'd be a scenario I wouldn't be thrilled to see either. I wouldn't be thrilled to see him go to New York. If he wants to go to Texas and play for a team that's going to win 70 games a year, I'd totally be okay with that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Which World Series loss hurts more? if you're a Houston Astro fan. 2019, you lose to the Nationals, Game 7. You lost every single home game in that World Series. This year to the Atlanta Braves, we've just lived it. To me, it's two different angles. The fact that, look, the Braves just beat you in this series. 2019, you felt like you gave it away. You had a lead late. You pull Zach Greinke. You don't use Gerrit Cole. You literally lost every single home game. Like, on the playing field alone, 2019, to me, hurts worse if you're a Houston Astros fan. But I feel like people in Houston wanted this one more in 2021 because of all the stories that came out after 2019. We found out about the sign-stealing scandal. We saw all the national media's narratives towards the sign-stealing scandal. I feel like the tougher one to swallow on the field was 2019. That one was winnable. That one you gave away. This one you just got beat, in my opinion. But in terms of wanting it more, I feel like people wanted 2021 a little bit more.
I mean, it's also what's happened most recently that everybody, it's going to stick in their craw a little bit more. But I'm with you. I think 19 hurts a whole hell of a lot more because this one was like game four, only it was game seven. For most of the game, they had you right. It was like the ultimate tease. They had you right on the verge because you were winning the whole game. And without Will Harris, regardless of A.J. Hinch's shortcomings in the way he didn't manage his pitching staff and the guys he didn't pitch or the guys he didn't leave in long enough, and the changes that he made, you were winning. And you were winning in a Game 7 on your home field. You weren't playing the hottest team in baseball that had been mowing through everybody, that was absolutely hitting bomb after bomb in this series when your bats went absolutely dormant. And it looked like you were just trying to fight. And with injuries factored in as well, you were healthy. You were attacking. You were a better team than the Nationals. You were winning at home in Game 7, and you had it all in the palm of your hand, and then you screwed it all up. So that's why 19 hurts more. But it is reasonable to think that for the fact that it just happened last night and everybody thought, much like that Dodgers series, hey, we should feel good like the Dodgers, or the fact that the Braves choked one off to the Dodgers last year after being up 3-1. If we got the last two in our ballpark and we have the team that we believe we have, we should have won. It's easy for you to say you should have won. You were a better regular season team than the Braves. But the Braves were a better team than you in the playoffs. And you look at the teams they beat and how they beat them and how they were – when you look at just – from the win totals of each team that they beat, I think there were something like 30 games less than the teams that they beat in the playoffs. They were a 500 team in August, and through some unbelievable maneuvering by their general manager, with their best player out for the year, they got as red hot as you can get, and they rolled. Yeah. And you just have to tip your cap. No one's tipping your cap to the Nationals. For all the celebrating and the laughing and the finger-pointing and the remarks afterwards, you play that World Series 10 times, and I firmly believe the Astros win that probably 8 out of 10.
Yeah, 2019, 2021, which one hurts worse? When we come back, let's take a look at this college football playoff rankings for the first time. But first, a minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. Joel, it's basketball season. The NBA already here. College basketball season gets underway soon. And we want to tell you about Pro Dunk Hoops. Your kids are going to want to be playing basketball now that it's basketball season. So get Pro Dunk Hoops. It's the best basketball goal on the planet. I've seen a ton of basketball goals. Joel has too, and he'll be the first one to tell you. No one does it better than Pro Dunk Hoops. Tempered glass backboard that you can trust. It has that authentic feel. Adjustable goals. You can lower it down to 5 feet. I like doing that so I can throw down some jams. And it's got the competition-grade breakaway rim that's perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. An extended overhang so you don't sprain your ankle on the basketball stanchion, keeping you and your loved ones safe. They're sturdy, they're strong, which allows for the tempered glass backboard, the extended driveway for better playability. Durability of strength of Pro Dunk Hoops with their stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, and their exclusive rust armor. And they'll install the goal for you. Yes, Pro Dunk Hoops will professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do the work for you. Pro Dunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options that will be a perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Call them now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
Voted and ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
College Football Committee unveiled their first rankings yesterday. Top six, Georgia 1, Alabama 2. How's that Michigan at? State 3. Oregon 4. Ohio State 5. Cincinnati 6. Michigan 7. Oklahoma 8. Wake Forest 9. Notre Dame 10. Boy, I have some thoughts, and I just don't even know where to begin. I think Reddit, their college football Twitter, about summed it up better than I could. So the College Football Committee does not exist to create the most deserving playoff. They exist to create the best product for advertisers and TV executives once they admit that these rankings won't be so controversial. You look at these rankings here, and my first big takeaway is, look, how is Cincinnati ranked 6, but they're number 2 in the AP? And what they'll tell you is, oh, they don't have the body of work. Yet they have a top 5 victory of anybody in college football. They literally beat your number 10 team by 3 possessions in South Bend. Alabama has a loss, and they're number 2. But my biggest takeaway with this is they overrated the Big Ten so much. Michigan State, 5 in the AP. They're 3 in the committee. Ohio State, 6th in the AP. They're 5th in the committee. And then you go a little bit further down the list. You have Minnesota, ranked number 20. They're not even ranked in the AP. Wisconsin, 21 in the committee. They're not even ranked in the AP.
They don't deserve anywhere
near it. Iowa, 22 in the committee. Unranked in the AP. The Big Ten, incredibly overrated in these college football playoff rankings.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm a Big Ten guy. And I'm going to be the first one to tell you that they don't have any business being there. And the only one that has the potential to be there at the end of the year is Ohio State, in my mind. And as good as Michigan State's been, they're not one of the teams that I would ever consider in any other year a top 4 caliber team. Now, this year, because there's been so much parity and, quite honestly, so much bad football played across the country, you have teams that are in the mix that you're scratching your temple. I was like, this isn't even basketball of 10 years ago. Did you say Wake Forest? I mean, you're looking at some of these teams.
At least they haven't lost.
I understand, but at least from a Cincinnati perspective, they're the ones that got screwed the most. But the fact that Alabama sits at 2 after they lost to an unranked A&M team, and you look at some of the other options, it just tells you how bad across the board college football has been. And it's one thing to say there isn't that true dominant team like Alabama normally is every single year with maybe one or two competitors. It's just been so bad across the board that even Alabama with a freshman quarterback has looked different than they've ever looked. Georgia's got the best defense in the country, but we still don't know what they are with either quarterback offensively. So you keep looking, going every single team you can poke a hole at, and no one's jumping out at you saying they're good. But then when you see these rankings come out, with all that said, you're screwing the teams that have at least done what you said, which is win the games that are on your schedule.
That's what I find to be funny. And I misspoke on Cincinnati. They only beat Notre Dame by 2 possessions in South Bend, not by 3. Got a little ahead of myself. What's interesting, too, here is like they don't value beating everybody on your schedule. Oregon right now is the number 4 ranked team in the college football committee. And I hate that I get so worked up over this year in, year out. And I can't wait to the point where there's an 8-team, 12-team playoff. That way we don't have to have this stupid conversation on trying to nitpick losses and victories and college football can catch up with the rest of the world and literally every other sport in the world, and there's actually qualifications to get to its playoff, and winning games actually matters like it does in every other sport in the history of the world. How is Oregon number 4? Like, I understand that they beat Ohio State. I get that. But Oregon literally lost to a team that's under 500 in a bad Pac-12. They lost to Stanford. Stanford has not won a game since they beat Oregon. Stanford is 3-5 on the season, yet Oregon's ranked number 4. Like, Cincinnati might not have a great strength of schedule, but you know what Cincinnati hasn't done? They haven't lost to a team that's sub-500.
Yeah, that's my whole thing with Oregon was if their body of work takes out the loss, and it's just that they beat Ohio State, now I'll at least be open to the discussion. But the fact that they have, it's just like with Alabama, only worse. When you lose to a team like that, it doesn't matter who you beat. You are as good as your best win and your worst loss. And guess what? Your worst loss says you have no business being in that top 4. And Dell, because you are our resident expert on college football, we obviously want you in on here. But I mean, it just looks like we used to say, well, there's 4 or 5 teams fighting for those 4 spots. There's basically 2 teams.
When you come to the realization that what happens on Tuesday nights is simply a TV show made for TV event, mm-hmm. you tend to relax on these things, Jeremy. It might take a while for you, but the Oregon thing, as you pointed out, Oregon has wins over 5-4 UCLA, lost to 3-5 Stanford, struggled, had to stop Cal on 4th down in the red zone, 3-5 Cal. Arizona was within a possession going into the fourth quarter, 0-8 Arizona. And yet, because they beat Ohio State, that so much outweighs Cincinnati schedule? Cincinnati, you telling me Tulane's not better than Arizona? Tulane couldn't play with Cal.
They almost beat Oklahoma.
Yeah, Tulane can't. Well, maybe not UCLA, but the schedules aren't that dissimilar, other than, you know, a conference that they've pretty much disrespected throughout the playoffs history is now giving Oregon a boost. Look, we've got sound from Barta, and you know what? No one should take these guys seriously, or men and women seriously. This is a thing brought together by ESPN, and you know what's great for ESPN? Throw Oregon a bone, but you know what'll happen? If Ohio State wins out and Oregon wins out, they will put Ohio State above Oregon and say, well,
sure they will.
They lost, but it was early. They're a different team now, and they beat Pitt, and they beat Michigan and Michigan State and Penn State. That schedule down the stretch is far tougher than Oregon. So right now, they're comfortable putting Oregon ahead of Ohio State. But when it comes down to it, if Ohio State wins out, they will finish ahead of Oregon.
Dell always brings sense to the show. It's what stop he does. It. He calms me down. God, what's crazy about this, too, and we'll get to some of these comments from Gary Barta, who is the chair of the College Football Committee. What conference do we all agree that's incredibly overrated right now in the college football rankings? It's the Big Ten. Gary Barta is the current athletic director for the University of Iowa. That you could be so brash to overrate the Big Ten in the very first rankings of this thing by the chair of the committee whose day job is to be the AD at Iowa. Unbelievable. Here's what he had to say about Cincinnati being sixth.
I would say the committee has great respect for Cincinnati. The win at Notre Dame clearly at Notre Dame is a really impressive win. When you look at their schedule after that, or who they played after that, who else did they beat? And so that was the other question. And, you know, the committee has been watching games all year, and most recently in the last 2 weeks, a 2-6 Navy team and then a 1-7 Tulane team with a freshman quarterback starting. So very impressive win against Notre Dame, a lot of respect. But looking at the whole picture, we feel six is the right place for Cincinnati.
I don't think he watched.
Did he happen to pay attention to 0-8 Arizona with the quarterback on the way to throwing five picks in the game, push Oregon to 24-19 going to the fourth quarter until he threw more interceptions that led to them, that spread getting bigger than it really should have been? Did he watch the game where Cal was within a first down or a goal-to-go situation of tying that game, a bad Cal football team? Look, they're not consistent. This is why you can't get upset, because if – you know, ESPN has a job to do. That's why someone like we wouldn't be there, because we would ask the question, did you watch the Cal-Oregon game? Did you watch the Cal-Arizona
game? Did you watch them lose to Stanford?
A five-loss Stanford team?
I mean, that's the thing.
Who has Stanford? That's what I keep saying. Played?
Even if you want to take out of the equation the near misses, just look at the losses and tell me that if you lose a game like that to Stanford and then suddenly try and warrant the fact that they should still belong in the top four, it's ridiculous.
The other problem that let's get to Gary Barta's comments first on Oregon before I get to my next point. Here's why he said that Oregon deserves the fourth spot right now.
Everyone has their own opinions, but as you go through with the 13 members, head-to-head is certainly talked about. When you talk about Oregon and Ohio State, Oregon has had some nice wins. They've played very good football. They've been through a lot of challenges, losing their starting running back and some other, you know, Thibodeau being their best player early on. But they beat Ohio State at Ohio State, and that was really important to the committee. Ohio State is playing great football. Since that time, they're on a roll. They're explosive offensively. So at the end of the day, that's why they're one slot behind Oregon because of the head-to-head, but right up there near the top because of how terrific they've been playing.
Don't compare them to Ohio State.
No.
Compare them to the other teams, and they have one nice win. They don't have nice wins.
Right.
They have one. That schedule is Charmin soft, just like if you want to compare them to Cincinnati's, and Cincinnati found a way not to lose to a five-loss football team.
Yeah, they haven't lost to a sub-500 team like Oregon has. They beat Fresno by 7, nice win there, Ducks. They beat Cal by 7, nice win there, Ducks. They beat UCLA, nice win there, Ducks. The tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist of me, too, here is like, they stacked the deck against Cincinnati right from the start. Not only do they have Cincinnati ranked 6th overall on this very first ranking, but they also left out 20th-ranked Houston, who's 20th-ranked in the AP. They're not in the committee's rankings. They left out SMU, who's ranked in the AP at 23. They left them out entirely. So not only are they putting Cincinnati 6th, but they're telling Cincinnati, look, No matter what you do the rest of the season, you do not belong in the top four.
There's a guy on a podcast. He's a Big Ten guy like Joel. He Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS network. His name's Tom Frenelli. And he said for years that they don't want any part of a non-Power 5. You know, sometimes you try to fight it. No, if someone's really deserving, they would let him in. This is your prime example of why it won't happen. The teams that they play that would be considered good football teams, in their rankings, won't be considered good wins. And then if you beat them, they'd even fall farther down the totem pole. It is set up for what we've seen. And you know what? Don't be surprised if two lost Bama, if they lose to Georgia in a close one, they find their way in.
I agree.
Don't be surprised.
And as you mentioned, I'm a Big Ten guy, right? And I would love to have the friendly banter of saying, you know what, Wisconsin's in, Houston's not, and that's the way it should be, Jeremy. But no, Houston has more business being in there, and Wisconsin has no business being in there and should be out, because Wisconsin has been absolutely dog snot terrible offensively all season long. They started out as a preseason top 15, and they immediately showed you they had no business being there. And they consistently did everything to show you that they were a worthless team this year. Even going away from what their strength has been for years. Offensive line, running the football, doing the things with ball control. None of those things. Now, suddenly, because 2 weeks in a row, you finally find it and you beat Purdue and then you beat Iowa, who are ranked. They're better than a team like Houston? No, BS, man. I mean, this is why. You're right. One thing, there's no getting around it. It's obvious. It's a made for TV event. But the thing is, it was one thing to say it was all computer generated, but then it's another thing to say, well, you know, it's our opinion. Well, then you guys are a bunch of no brains when it comes to opinions. Because if you all see the same thing that you see that we don't, and we're watching college football every week, what the hell are you doing on the committee?
The other one that I found to be just absolutely crazy, and you're going to be like, oh, who cares? They're 17th. Mississippi State was ranked 17th by the committee to justify Alabama having another quality victory on their schedule. Mississippi State unranked in the AP. Mississippi State, who beat Louisiana Tech by 1 point, who lost to an American Conference middle-of-the-pack team in Memphis earlier this year, but the American Conference is terrible. They lost to LSU, who has fired their coach. And who is Mississippi State's best win? Alabama or Texas A&M, whenever they had a backup quarterback? The Mississippi State Bulldogs, with losses to Memphis, losses to LSU, a one-point win against Louisiana Tech, and who is one game above 500. One game above 500 is 17th in the college football rankings. I mean, it is embarrassing. Give me a playoff. And this is this is my settle down moment whenever I just, hey, whatever. It's just sports, right? Don't get so worked up over this. Like, it is embarrassing. This is my all-encompassing thought on this, though. I am so ready for a playoff where we can stop arguing these stupid things like this. Which loss means more? Which conference does this? Give me a real playoff. Give me qualifications to a real playoff so we can stop arguing about this stupid stuff.
Well, the fact that it always comes down to personal opinions is what's really bothersome to me. Have some kind of formula that we can translate to making sense of it and going, well, as long as this is the criteria, this is how we got here. But we don't have that. And Dell, I didn't mean to cut you off. That's the thing that's most bothersome to me, because you know what? Unless you do a true NCAA basketball tournament format, a March Madness format, someone's always going to get screwed as long as it's just up to personal opinion in terms of who gets in and who doesn't.
Just to illustrate the nonsense that goes on, the SEC has the highest one loss team, the highest two loss team, and the highest three-loss team. The only team with three losses in the rankings, well, Wisconsin's there too, but Mississippi State at 17. So they have elevated the SEC. So, hey, you lose an SEC game, that's a quality loss.
But they lost a game to an American team too. Don't tell the committee that.
Well, that one doesn't count. It doesn't count.
Yeah, I guess it's a good way of looking at it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to share your thoughts. Looks like Dusty Baker will be back as the manager of the Houston Astros. Couple of players saying nice things about him after the game yesterday, but a big loss to the Astros coaching staff. We get into it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
That's some unfinished business, you know, and I love these guys over here. You know, I love the town of Houston. The fans are behind us. These guys, you know, they gave it their all.
Dusty Baker, unfinished business. That was postgame yesterday after the Astros fall in Game 6 of the World Series, thus ending their season. According to Bob Nightingale, Dusty will be able to pick up on that business starting next season. Reports are that the Astros and Dusty Baker are working on a contract deal that would keep Dusty in Houston for another year or two. I'm okay with it, and I know that people say, what, you're okay with that? You bash Dusty all the time. I thought Dusty managed well in the playoffs. To me, he has kind of, morphed a little bit more into the analytical part of the game, and I feel like he takes the advice of James Click and Joe Espada. I'm okay with Dusty being back. I think he's good in the clubhouse. Don't think he's a great game manager, and if he is back next year, and it sounds like he will be, I'll still be very critical of him, as you know I will be. But I don't hate it. The only thing I fear is if it means that Joe Espada is no longer the bench coach for this team.
Well, and I think you have to ask yourself the question of, if he goes, would someone else come in there and be better? And I think because you have so much talent on this team, anybody could, you know, we always say that in certain situations, anybody can manage this team, right? Well, the thing is if you're going to remove Dusty Baker for the intangibles that he brings and all the things that has brought this team even closer together, then whoever you bring in better be able to do that and win more and do some of the things that you've had an issue with. I don't know if there's anybody out there or anybody in baseball capable of doing that, because anybody new now has got to go through a huge growth period of growing pains where you got to prove to yourself and your new team that you're capable of doing this and you're a good dude and you're on their side and, you know, you're a loyal guy for the team in the locker room and all these other things. And that itself could make you take a step backwards when this team sorely cannot afford to do that right now. And so, therefore, you get a guy that everybody in the locker room believes in, that knows that he has their back, that knows he's, with from the resting guys to some of the other things he's done, that knows he's protecting his players. That's a major factor.
And admittedly, it's something that I overlook, because you get into the day-to-day grind of analyzing 162 games, and you know, you come on the next day and you're talking about the previous night's game. You lose what a manager means to a clubhouse. And that's where Dusty Baker's strengths as a manager are. I believe he's average at best game manager. But where you really earn your keep as a big league manager is the clubhouse. And we had Doug Glanville on earlier, who played for Dusty Baker. And he told us how special he is in that clubhouse. A couple of Astros yesterday were being asked, you know, Dusty doesn't have a contract for next season. Do you want Dusty Baker back? And a couple of the big names for the Astros said, yeah, we want Dusty back. And first and foremost, here's Jose Altuve about it.
Yeah, absolutely. He did an amazing job this year, and he took us to the World Series.
So Dusty, short and sweet. Look, he took us to the World Series. He did an amazing job. And Jose Altuve, look, he's not going to sugarcoat things either. Like, if he didn't like Dusty Baker, I don't believe he's going to say that. He might not throw him under the bus, but I don't think he would give a glowing review like that when he's ticked off after losing a World Series game. So the point that you have, you're the face of the franchise that's saying that to me resonates. That matters.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm trying to go up and down the roster and think of one guy that would be so outspoken that if there was an issue, he would just come out blaring and blasting Dusty Baker.
There's one, right?
I mean, I think Correa would be the guy that would have spelled it all out for you. Bregman's not that guy.
Here's what Correa had to say about Dusty Baker being back.
I hope Dusty's back. I mean, he's a great manager, great person, great human being. Love playing for him. Love every single second. I learned so much from him. Spent a lot of time in his office. He's a great one.
That's enough for me. Look, again, I'm the first one criticizing his game management moves. I'm still going to do that next season. We might even have some fun with how much he names drops a bunch of former big leaguers. But what he means to the clubhouse, what Altuve and Correa, who might not even be back with the Astros next year, are saying about Dusty Baker, I'm on board with this, if you can believe that.
Well, and I know that when it's your centerfold talking, that, you know, that when he's your man crush and he's telling you, yeah, then you're all in. But that's what I'm saying. Look, I think this team has been honest enough, and no one's been more honest with the media than Carlos Correa. If everybody's telling you this and no one's telling you the opposite, no one's looking like that they're butt hurt with their feelings, you know, all in a knot, and that they're questioning whether they belong here anymore, that's a big factor. We're always going to question the manager because we care about this team so much. And on a daily basis, that's what we're paid to do. We're paid to analyze and give our opinions. Sometimes they're really good. Sometimes they're really bad. It's based on things that he's done. But the fact that it's so delicate of a situation when you have the salaries and the egos and the personalities of these type of professional athletes, and for them to all stick together to basically say, hey, this is the dude. I mean, this is our guy. That means something. And so that's why I think he deserves to be back. Also, the other thing, Jeremy, you got to take into consideration is, and this isn't so much with the Astros as it is with the Texans and the Rockets, it matters what other people think, right? When he didn't have a deal at the end of the year and this team had the record that it had and won another division and did all the things that set themselves up for then another playoff run, Bob Nightingale and others were the first to say, Dusty Baker is managing without a contract for next year, and look what he's done. And I don't think they wanted egg on their face to say, yeah, we just completely poo-pooed on a guy that did everything and more that we ever asked him to do when we hired him for this job in the first place. The last thing we should do is send him packing after what he did, where it doesn't show that he did anything. What's the worst thing? The worst thing you can say, obviously, the in-game decisions. But the worst thing that you can say about Dusty Baker other than that is that he butted heads with James Click because he wanted to play his gut instead of the analytics. Okay, so what?
Yeah, and it seemed like they got over that, right? I mean, Dusty admitting that Click was right in that regard. The big loss, then, usually what's an unsung hero in a good run of success for a baseball team is sometimes the pitching coach. I believe that Brent Strom has gotten that love, though, from this city with what he's been able to do. He said goodbye after last night's game.
I mean, I've been in the game a long time, and I was out of the game. Jeff Lunau brought me back, and so it's difficult. We'll see how I feel in a couple days. You know, there may be another opportunity for me somewhere else. I may look at that. I may just go lie on a beach in Mexico. You know, but I need to enjoy my life a little bit. You know, I haven't had a summer in a long time, and so we'll see. I haven't made a final decision yet, but I know I won't be back as the Major League pitching coach here. Yeah, I know that for a fact.
I think you could see him in like an advisory role. He said that he isn't quite thinking he's done with the game, but he will not be back with the Astros, will not be a pitching coach again in Major League
Baseball. I hate it for so many reasons. He even knows to the number. Talk about a guy that wasn't maybe analytics driven from the start, but has gotten into it. He, as part of that press conference last night, or impromptu press conference walking out the door, said there were 99 pitchers on his watch since he came to Houston. He knew every single one of them. He knew, you know, he said some of them pitched only a game or two or an inning or two, and others won Cy Youngs. But he knew them. He worked with them. And what I don't like is the end of that, which is it sounded a little bit more abrupt and a little bit more harsh than the fact that, hey, he was looking out for his other two coaches and he knows there was a time for him to look, if it was just that I need more time with my wife and away from baseball to relax and enjoy life, I'm with it. But the fact that I know for one thing is for certain I won't be a Major League pitching coach with this organization next year, that's a little bit bothersome.
Well, he said, and maybe that was just the snippet there that kind of is misleading. He mentioned this with Berman like a month ago, too, during this early in the playoffs, that this was probably going to be it for him. He mentioned that this was a decision that he told Click that he was making a month ago, too. So it sounded like it was his decision. Bob Nightingale reporting some stuff earlier that have all come true. He said Dusty Baker will be back and sign a contract for 2022 in the next 48 hours. He said that Brent Strom will retire. He might maybe in an advisory role in semi-retirement. He also said Zach Greinke will leave the Astros but wants to continue pitching for an NL team.
Because he wants to hit.
Huh? But the DH is coming. Like, what?
That's a good point, too.
What is that all about?
If indeed it is, then yeah. I mean, look, the thing is, it's weird about that, and I think it's all about the finances with Zach Greinke, because if he wanted to give the Astros a sweetheart of a deal, he sung their praises over and over for letting him be him, right? For, you know, staying out of the limelight. You notice he's never in the locker room celebrations, and some guys might get their feathers ruffled because of that, going, bro, you're part of the team. You need to be in here. You need to be part of us. You know, the fact that they let him during COVID when there weren't fans, and they let him sit with the cardboard cutouts when he wasn't playing. You know, they've embraced how, like, completely direct he can be and how quirky he can be. So he said he really liked it here. They dressed like him on the one road trip, too, because they want him to be a part of everything that they do. But there's really no place for him. If you have your five young starters that are going to be a part of your rotation next year, and that's assuming they're going to do something with Odorizzi. I think they have to, right? But I think when you take Javier, who was in the pen but is going to be a starter, and Urquidy, and Fromber, and Lance, or I miss
Luis.
And Garcia, they're your five starters for not only this year, for the foreseeable future. So, Greinke, it's been nice knowing you. You've had a hell of a run here, but even with a discount, I don't think it makes sense. and the dollars don't make sense. So he's going to walk. Odorizzi's a problem because he's under contract with you for a year. You got to find a home for him.
But it's going to be hard to trade him. You need a mop-up guy in the bullpen, too. That might just be one of the things you have to swallow. I mean, what choice are you going to have?
I mean, unless they can work some kind of a buyout, I don't know if that's even possible. I just think that he has already proven that he does not want to come out of the bullpen. He believes in his heart of hearts. He's like Carmelo Anthony coming off the bench. He doesn't want to be a bullpen guy. He believes he's still a starter in Major League Baseball. That's a problem in itself. And if it stunts the growth and the ability to put out a young pitcher into your rotation, he's got to go.
The Astros would trade Jake Odorizzi for a bucket of curveballs right now. And Zach Greinke might retire whenever the new CBA says that there's a universal DH and he won't be able to bat. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. Coming up next, now that the Astros are done, what we have to look forward to now in this great city. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.